Welcome to the Cutter's Notch Podcast, a program created by Michael DeCamp, the author of Abandon Hope, a Cutter's Notch novel. Recorded in the Cutter's Notch Studios, this podcast is focused on all things creative, with special forays into books and matters of faith. Join Michael as he catches up with an author, a songwriter, a painter, a comedian, or anyone working or supporting a creative endeavor. So turn up the volume, listen, and catch up on what's happening in Cutter's Notch.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Cutter's Notch podcast. I'm Michael DeCamp. And
I'm Angela DeCamp.
We are your hosts for this program, and we are excited that we have a special guest with us today. Sarah Joy Fries is my agent, and she has agreed to join us on the podcast. Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
And so we're gonna chat with Sarah in just a moment, but before we get fully into that, we're gonna do our usual talk a little bit about what book that we're reading right now. And
I think we need to expand this topic because this is a creativity podcast. It's not just a book podcast.
Well, okay, yeah.
So I kind of feel like it could be something where we talk about all of the creative things or the main creative thing we're absorbing.
Is that your way of saying that you have something else you want to talk about?
Yeah, because I mean, if we record this frequently, then I'm going to be reading the same book all the time. It's not going to be very exciting for me to talk about. But I mean, I do have something else to highlight.
So, Very good. You want to go first then?
I can. So I'm still reading the same books that I think I was talking about the last time, which is How to Be an Anti-Racist. And so that one's still going, but as far as something else I'm consuming, since I know that right now has been really a stressful year for everyone, one of the things that I've found joy in is just like wholesome media to consume. So a couple of things that I've really enjoyed just watching, I suppose, is, Anthony Hopkins on Twitter. Have you seen any of his
videos? I've seen a couple of them.
It's really funny. So he posts these videos on Twitter all the time that are just him kind of slowly going crazy in pandemic. Like he's like, and tomorrow we're here and tomorrow. And he like tries to get like a twitchy eye. It's really funny. It's kind of like watching your grandpa kind of be goofy. So I definitely, if you are on Twitter, have access to, I would definitely recommend checking out his tweets. And then the other thing I discovered this week, which I think some people are aware of and maybe know a little bit about, is on Instagram, there's this Instagram account called the Shirley Temple King. Have you heard of this, Dad?
No.
So it's this little boy. He's probably in second grade, third grade, and he goes around to all different places and he will review the Shirley Temple. And he's like, okay, they definitely used ginger ale, but there's no cherries. And so this, and he'll like take a sip of the Shirley Temple and then he'll give it a review out of 10. And it's adorable and cute. And it's, yeah. So if you're looking for something to lift your spirits, you don't have time for like a full book, or you just want something in the middle of the day, I would definitely check out either Anthony Hopkins' Twitter account or the Shirley Temple King on Instagram.
The Shirley Temple.
Yeah. King. I'll have to show you later.
Sarah, have you ever had a Shirley Temple?
Oh, I'm sure like once or twice I have. I don't typically drink a lot of sugared drinks, but
yeah, I can't handle them either.
Yeah. They're pretty intense.
I had completely forgotten about the drink called a Shirley Temple. Cause when I was a kid, my sister used to get me a Shirley Temple once in a while. My sister was 17 years old when I was born. So by the time I was 4 or 5, she was in her early 20s, and she'd take me out to eat somewhere. And, inevitably, she got her, whatever her adult beverage choice was. And then I got a Shirley Temple, but,
I can just picture it. So adorable. You're like little high pants that are pulled up way too high. And
probably,
I've seen photos. I know it's true. So,
oh yeah. Well, yeah, I don't hide my weird clothing choices when I was a child. So
you didn't have much of a choice.
No. So the book I'm reading, because I'm going to talk about a book, but the book I'm reading is the I'm still reading Sarah Gowen's The Cribbabanians,
Crevabanian.
Yeah. What'd you say?
It's more of a creve sound at the beginning.
Crevabanian. Crevabanians.
I think she would
correct me. She'd correct me. But she herself would say that she probably should have named them, titled them a different
way.
She
did say that the last time we spoke with her.
She's told me that before too. But it's a young adult fantasy novel. It's the second in her series. And it's, if you like young adult novels with a teenage heroine who is running around the countryside with a dragon.
You're making this, if you like this very specific niche thing, here's the plot of the book. If you like the plot, you would like this book.
There's a lot of people who like, there's a lot of particularly young adults who like dragon stories, and it's a portal, kind of a portal fantasy. And it's not, you know, I'm usually into Jack Reacher and things that blow up.
Manly books. Yeah.
But I am enjoying her book. And right now, my theories on her book are...
Are they true
yet? They're not proven out yet, but they're still holding.
This is going to be a running thing because I think that every week you talk about, I've got a theory, but I don't know yet.
So far,
now it's like, are we ever going to know? You gotta tell us.
I don't know. We'll find out. But right now, it's looking real positive. So Sarah, do you have any books that you're reading right now you want to highlight, or anything that any book, you're a literary agent, so you may want to highlight one of your authors, but, what are you, or you can talk about what you're reading.
Sure. Well, so I don't know. I mean, a lot of the, I don't know if I'm, you know, doing my job right. I'm not sure what other literary agents do if they read what is currently out, but because I read so much for my job, I often have to do a lot of backpedaling and read stuff that came out a while ago because I feel like I have to catch up. Like I said, I don't know if that's right or wrong, but I'm actually reading one of my a pastime favorite author. Her name is Bea Henderson. She writes romantic suspense, although her style somewhat changed and it tends to be more suspense now than romance. And it came out a couple years ago, I think, Faces of Guilt series. So I've been enjoying that, but I also usually have a book going on audio as well. And for that, I'm reading Roots, which is awesome.
Alex Haley, is that right?
Yeah. So they have the mini series out, but they also obviously have the book as well. And I think I'm going to have to go back and reread it in print just because the names are difficult to, you know, keep up with.
Right.
And I just want to make sure that I'm like seeing them in my head as well as hearing them. Yeah. But it's wonderful on audio as well.
I would imagine that you probably do based on what you've told us, it sounds like you do a lot of reading. Is reading still something that you would like choose to enjoy outside of like the work aspect, or do you get kind of leisure time doing other things?
Yeah, that's a good question. So it's definitely not something I choose as much as I used to, but I feel like a lot of that is because, you know, kind of like you were saying with the Twitter and Instagram, there's so many other interesting and well-written creative TV or social media aspects of life now that have just as much creativity and great language to them as a book does. So I do find myself consuming more, you know, a Netflix series. I still try to reach for stuff that's more highbrow, I guess.
Yeah, like traditional media or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I try to look for the interesting things versus just, you know, your, I don't know, whatever Criminal Minds or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, not that that's a bad thing, but I try to look for something slightly more, for me, elevated. But it's not necessarily in book form. It's, you know, sometimes it's in like a Netflix series or something like that.
Is there a Netflix series that you've been into in the last year or so?
Oh, gosh. Now that I've said that.
I backed you into a corner. I'm sorry.
That's okay. My husband and I have been keeping up with the Epstein thing. So, but you have to take it slow. I mean, at least we do because it's just so intense. So we've kind of been watching that documentary lately. But again, it's super intense.
Which
so. It's called, I think it's like Dirty Money or something, or no, it's Filthy Rich. That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's a Netflix kind of documents that whole story. I watched it and I was so consumed. I think I watched it just all in one day.
Oh man.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to watch, but
We watched the first one and then I'm like, I have to take a break. So and I have kids and I just, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But I always like I rewatch Gilmore Girls like all the time.
That's a good one to rewatch.
Yeah, that show was really well written. You know, it's not typically a guy kind of show, but I really got a kick out of that show.
See, I don't know. I would debate you on that. What's a guy kind of show? Why does it have to be a certain way?
Oh, I don't know, because I have these stereotypes about what guys like and what girls like, I guess. I don't know.
I think you can just like whatever show you want to like.
Well, I suppose
the writer of that show, so I follow writers, obviously, because I'm an agent, but the writer of that show did The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, mm-hmm. which is out on Prime. I had to cancel my Prime account because I was getting too many boxes, and that was not a good thing. So, but that, I've seen the previews for it, and I want to watch it because it looks really good.
I've seen the first two seasons. It is very, very good. I think you would like it. If you like Gilmore Girls, because it is the same writer. I think you'd really like it.
Mm. Yeah.
I think I've seen two episodes of maybe an episode and a half.
Dad, you would probably
like
it.
Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
I mean, you liked Gilmore Girls whenever we'd have it on. So yes. I think you'd probably actually enjoy Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
In fact, I think I like the Gilmore Girl. Try that again.
Girls.
I think I probably like the Gilmore Girls. That's hard to say, actually. Enough that I would even watch that on my own if I came across it and.
Yeah,
I was in the right frame of mind. It's just such really quick.
The way that they, I guess that's the thing is they speak really fast. So
yeah, and it's quick wit.
Yeah,
it's really good. So, Roots. You say you're listening to Roots. I actually believe that I read that book myself way back. I forgot about this, but I watched the miniseries. So I'm going to give my age away a little bit. But I watched the miniseries when it was originally released back in the, I guess the 70s. And then shortly after that, I read the book. So I didn't know you went that far,
Dad.
Yeah. So that was, that's actually a really good book. So cool.
Yeah.
Well, let's shift over and talk a little bit about
who you are, what you do, your raison d'être.
Yeah. The literary agent world. So, when I first got connected with Sarah.
Yeah, give us some background here on how you know her.
I was trying to float my book, Abandoned Hope, out there for the world.
And you almost abandoned hope until.
No, I never quite got that desperate. But I submitted a lot of, now I'm drawing a blank on what they're called. But basically, what are they called, Sarah, when you submit your book to an agent?
Your queries.
Yes. I submitted a bunch of queries and I got a bunch of rejections. And at some point in time, I submitted to WordServe Literary, which is where Sarah works, correct? Mm-hmm. And I did that on the recommendation of a friend of mine whose name is Gary Myers. Gary worked for Leafwood Press. And he and I were friends going way back, and they didn't publish fiction, but he suggested I send a query to WordServe Literary and gave me Gary's name, or Greg's name, I should say, gave me Greg's name. And so I submitted the query to WordServe following the details on the website, and I also sent an email to Greg. I said, hey, please, you know, on Gary's reference, would you please help make sure I get a full look. And I didn't think anything more about it. And, I did. I thought about it all the time, but I was thinking about it in terms of all the different queries I'm sending out. Mm-hmm. And then I got an email. I still remember where I was, Sarah, when I got your email originally saying that you were interested in seeing the full manuscript. I was in a resort room, a hotel room space at Clearwater Beach.
Life is hard for you, Dad.
So, and then I, you know, we were in for the evening and I looked at my emails and boom, there was this email from someone named Sarah Joy. And, she said that she'd like to see my full manuscript. Now, Sarah, I don't know if that email I sent to, Greg had anything, any influence, as far as sending the reference from Gary or not, but, I was really grateful that you responded, positively. Yeah,
we definitely take those, you know, references from other authors or from people that know us through the editing and publishing world. We take those into higher consideration than just someone querying, who we don't know or who doesn't have any connection.
Good, good. Well, I'm glad I mentioned Gary then in my little email to Greg. So, and then, of course, I sent you the full manuscript, and then it was, I didn't hear from you for about 3 months, and I was starting to get a little bit.
He was abandoning his hope.
You keep going there, don't you?
I'm sorry, I can't help it. You walk me right into it.
Well, and then I know where I was when I got her email saying that she wanted to go forward with it, and I was at a restaurant in Niagara Falls. So
you're just like traveling all over the place. Well, people are going to think you're this cosmopolitan, you know, dapper man that just travels the globe.
That trip was a business trip. So I was at a business meeting. So
you don't need to know that, you know,
I'm an honest guy. So Sarah, what was the process? What's the process for you like when you're evaluating a new query that comes in?
Sure. So, I mean, it's a little different now. I work from home with my kids. So back when I was evaluating yours, my time was even more constrained because they were sleeping less. And so I wasn't able to read through a full proposal or even a full manuscript all at once. But normally what I do is, so I'll read through the query. If I like that, then I'll request the full, if it's fiction. If it's nonfiction, just the proposal. And then I read through, you know, some of the beginning. I never read through like the full manuscript unless it's a book that like I'm really enjoying. I actually think I did read through your entire full. It was good and it just kept me hooked throughout. So I'm pretty sure I read through yours. But normally, you know, I read a good chunk of the beginning, a good chunk of the middle, and a good chunk of the end. And if the author can hold up through beginning, middle, and end well, then I will offer representation. A lot of agents will take an author on if they think that they can, you know, edit some mistakes out and then send it out. But I like my proposals to be pretty much ready to go out the door. Maybe a few edits here and there, but nothing big, which is something that I appreciated about you and your work, Mike, is that it was ready to go out the door. It was polished and, you know, that was, so that's something that I look at again, because of the time constraint of working from home with my kids.
Good, good. So let's pretend for a second that, you know, I'm just somebody out here again, and I haven't found an agent. Yeah. So pretend you're talking to someone who hasn't found an agent. They're working on a book. Let's say it's a piece of fiction like Abandoned Hope or something like that. And they're contemplating what they need to do in order to be published. What is the advantage? Because today people can publish themselves. They can self-publish on various avenues. And I have a lot of friends who've done that now that I'm kind of fiddling around in the author world here in Indianapolis. What's the reason why an author should work to get a literary agent?
Sure. So basically, especially if your book is, you know, strong enough to go out to top-notch Christian editors and ABA, which would be New York editors, or even if it's not, you know, we look through contracts and we can, like, usually with, you know, your smaller editors, we might not be able to get you more money or even any money, but maybe we can get you more author copies, you know, book copies. And basically we look at those fine points of the contract and can negotiate, you know, some of the finer elements, percentages on audio, whether or not you retain your film rights, things like that. We're able to look through those contracts and things that you might not, you know, be aware of to even check to think. We can kind of fiddle with those fine bill structures. Sometimes we can squeak out a couple more points in the royalty structure. And so, you know, definitely the contract is another thing, or is a thing, the main thing probably that most editors, most authors want. The other thing would be, you know, just having someone to discuss your career with, having an open ear to plot, you know, future books or future ideas, or, you know, say you wanted to change and write Gilmore Girls type book. And I would say, well, that's not really your brain. So, you know, I mean, we could talk about it, but you have an established brain. And obviously, like with you, Mike, you have both fiction and nonfiction. But yeah, so, I mean, just having a sounding board is useful as well. And the connections too, you know, and a lot of editors don't look at manuscripts that aren't represented by an agent. And so just being able to get your foot in the door with an editor, you know, Mike, when we were pitching Abandoned Hope, we sent to a lot of New York editors, and some of those, I mean, they would never respond if it was just you sending the letter, but because my name has agent attached to it, they were at least willing to read it, yeah, to consider it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I am actually curious as far as, you know, if we're looking at the perspective of somebody who's considering an agent, you know, are there any mistakes to avoid if somebody is trying to send something over as a query?
Sure. Well, I think too, just in general, you know, if you're going to start sending to agents, make sure they're reputable. You know, never, if somebody says, hey, I'll be your agent if you pay me whatever amount, that's a big red flag. I don't get paid until Mike gets paid. And the editor sends two checks, they go to Greg, and then Greg sends some to me and some to Mike. He handles all that. But basically, you know, until the author or the agent doesn't get paid, until the author gets paid. So one big thing is, before you're going to start sending out, whether it's to an editor or to an agent, is to make sure you choose a reputable company. Even if you do go into, you know, the self-publishing world, choose a reputable company. But then in terms of once you've found an agent and you researched who you're going to send to, you know, my biggest thing is make sure you spell the agent's name right. A lot of people leave off the H on my name. And while that, you know, would seem like, oh, that's not a big deal, but when you get it so often, it just kind of becomes an annoyance. And that's not to say that I wouldn't read the rest of the query, but
you've got a bad taste in your mouth. Yeah.
Yeah. Right from the beginning. And, you know, make sure you know what the agent wants, you know, in terms of genre, in terms of length, in terms of, you know, somebody sent me a proposal yesterday directly in their email, and it was too much. And so just be aware of what they want. Personally, I usually ask for the first chapter as well as the query letter and a brief synopsis. Any more than that, beyond me saying, okay, yes, send me more, is just, again, too much and can be overwhelming. And again, genre, like WordServe is a Christian agency. That's not to say that all of our authors are Christian, but you have to make sure that you at least have the same, you're okay with our worldview, you know, that we're not going to be pitching, you know.
Yeah, it's like finding the right match there, yeah.
Exactly. Not that there's anything wrong with those books.
It just might not be the right place for it.
Exactly. Yeah.
But it sounds a lot like, so I'm a visual artist, and it's a lot of the things that you're saying kind of echo into the, I guess, the world that I live in, as far as like submitting art for different shows or galleries. And it's like when you're saying like, you don't want to necessarily go to an agent, quote unquote, who's going to ask you for money. It's like the same with the art. It's like, it's not really that great of an idea, traditionally, to go to a place that's you going to pay rent to use the wall rather than, you know, they believe in your art and, you know, when they get paid, you get paid. And it's also too, like, as far as like art submissions go, if they ask for a certain size of image and you send a giant image, you know, immediately you're kind of tossed out because you got to follow the rules as far as submissions go.
Yeah.
Well, I've heard that, there's, I guess, a lot of agents that if, someone submits a query based on like the website, usually every agency has a set of criteria they want to see in the query, right? And if someone submits something from based on the query request in the website, but they don't follow the guidelines and they kind of go their own way, that's an automatic red flag. Is that pretty close?
Yeah. And depending on, you know, the time period I'm at in my life, if I'm caught up on submissions or if I'm not caught up on submissions, you know, that will influence me one way or the other. You know, if I'm just trying to read through some queries pretty quickly and I'm kind of behind, then those would be things that I would look for more than others. Right now I am caught up, so I'm being more flexible if, you know, people don't have exactly what I want. But it's not to be nitpicky. It really is for a reason. It helps me be able to look through and kind of scan through quickly to be able to see, okay, yes, this person is a good writer and they have decent platform, versus having to kind of muddle through and figure out, you know, that I can take 5 to 10 minutes on determining if I want more from a query versus 30 minutes. So it's definitely helpful when all of the correct information is there and that it's not, you know, over and above what we're asking for.
And out of curiosity, it just popped into my mind. How did you end up in this role? Like, why are you an agent? How did you end up here? Sorry, tell me everything about you. Give me your life story.
Oh, that would take a long time. But no, I started, you know, I had a degree in library science and creative writing. So I wanted to be a writer, and I was publishing. I was publishing short stories. I was getting into some pretty, at the time, big name journals and, you know, started knowing the editors of those journals. One of the editors that I really wanted to get into his journal, I managed to get published into every single journal that he was published in, but I was never published in his journal. Aww. So that was kind of my sad moment. But anyway, so that was my background. And I went to my first writer's conference and I pitched my master's thesis, which was a master's thesis. And it was good for that, but it was not good for general market writing, which is what this agent obviously wanted. And so he basically tore the entire thing apart 2 weeks before I had to defend it.
Oh, that's fun.
I was terrified that I was going to fail graduate school. And I didn't, obviously, again, because it was exactly what graduate school had prepared me for and what they wanted. But I told him, okay, well, if I can't write, I know what good writing is. I mean, I've been trained in it for 2 years, so I can pick that out.
Yeah.
Can I read through your slush pile? And he said, contact me in 6 months. So literally 6 months to the day after he said that, I emailed him and he said, I just hired someone yesterday.
Ugh, so that's so frustrating.
Yeah. So I was Googling, I was in Colorado at the time. I'm back in Michigan where my family is now, but I was Googling literary agents in Colorado. And that's when I stumbled upon Greg Johnson and WordServe. And I called him, I emailed him and asked him the same question. And he said, sure, let's meet. And I started by reading through the slush pile. And then I think it was about 2010, 2011 that I did that. And then eventually worked my way up to associate agent and then literary agent. So that's the background. And yeah, I love I love what I do. I love being able to, like, now, I mean, if sometimes people ask me if I want to write, and it's just, it's weird for me to think about writing because all of my creative energy goes towards helping other people write. So I wouldn't know where to start. Like, I have no ideas because all my creative energy is tapped out on making other people's ideas the best that they can be. So
that's got to be really rewarding, though, like knowing that you're helping people kind of reach their goals.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just, like, that's the kind of person I am. I'm like the behind the scenes type of person. And even now, I mean, what writing is, and Mike can speak to this as well, it's so much more, it's probably 50% writing, 50% marketing. I mean, that's probably part of why you have this podcast is
yes.
The marketing aspect.
Not right? For me though. I just kind of hang out. I show up and we just end up talking. So,
well, it definitely
came out of that marketing request. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, it's not just for the love of writing. Like, if you want to write just to write, that's fine, but you're never going to be published. Like, you have to have that marketing aspect. And even really just over the past couple years, I've just realized, like, that's not who I am. I have no desire. I mean, even if I were to become a famous author someday down the road, I wouldn't be one of the famous authors that's like not my real name. You know, and I'm hiding in a cave somewhere. Like, mm-hmm. I have no desire to do the whole Facebook, Instagram. I mean, I have it, but it's just like my personal, this is my page account. So, yeah, I feel, I mean,
it's a lot of effort. It's more than I think people realize when they get into it. It's like, I mean, it really requires, it's like growing a garden, right? It requires constant care and, you know, consideration for every aspect. So, yeah.
And not that that's a bad thing. I mean, some people love it, but that's not who I am.
Yeah. Well, if you're writing, you're probably in it to write rather than to promote. I mean, I don't know. I can understand that.
Well, like she said, though, you have to have both.
Yeah.
Because you, in today's world, you can't be successful as an author unless you're willing and able to put a lot of energy.
Well, you're trying to engage. Into
the promotion of it.
And it's not the same as the way that you probably would have engaged even 10 years ago. I mean, now just, I mean, especially in the world we live in this year, but yeah, like everything is very much, how do we reach more people where they're at?
It's always shifting. Sarah, how many authors are you representing?
Oh gosh, I have a list. I want to say it's between 25 and 30, but that said, only about a handful of my authors are actually submitting right now, you know. So what, and this is something that I took from Greg, like, our mission is to serve authors. So if someone stops writing or needs to stop writing, we're not gonna fire you, you know. I know other agents even in the Christian world that do that, and that's fine, but we'll just, you know, keep you on our list. And then if you all of a sudden get a great idea, like, okay, let's submit it. I mean, obviously, again, that's not ideal for when you're brand building. And my active authors, you know, they understand that. But, you know, I do have some authors that if they were to come back and say, hey, I have this idea, I would, you know, work with them and hopefully we could get it out the door again.
Well, I appreciate your patience because, you know, for those folks out there in the listening world, Sarah and I first started kind of down this road in early, oh man, what year was
it? It's been a while.
2015 maybe. And that's when we first started. She started looking at it and agreed to run with it. And you didn't get your first piece of money out of anything I did until this year, right?
Yeah, we sent to... Oh, poor Mike. he's probably my author with the most rejections. I mean, we sent it to everybody. And it wasn't because it wasn't good. Like, it was good writing. And obviously, you know, I enjoy that. I don't represent stuff that I don't enjoy. But it was, I don't know, I think part of it was probably genre. We talked about genre, like, what genre does this really fit into?
Yeah, stuck in the middle between middle grade and young adult. And you know, my protagonists were the perfect age that nobody wants to read about, apparently, because it's like they're 12 and 13 years old. And if they had been younger, then I would have appealed to the middle grade.
Book, but
young adult really needs to be 16 to 20, you know, somewhere in there. And so I wrote about this group of kids that were age that nobody wants to read.
To be fair, like 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds, I remember being that age. I wouldn't have wanted to know a thing about me at that time. So I get it.
Well, and it was also the faith element, but there's also dark themes. And there was like this genre bending on all sides, which I love. But again, like readers have to have, there's a solid market that you have to go after.
Yeah.
And Mike was he didn't fit into a niche market, which I was fine with. But a lot of editors weren't. And we finally found Cynthia. And I mean, she's doing a great job over there at Winged. Assuming Mike's happy with her too.
Oh yeah. I'm very happy with her. She's very patient with me and she's very easy to work with. I'm probably, and if she's listening to this, this is her first heads up, but I'm probably going to be late on my
book. This is not the way you want to let somebody know.
On book three. Book three is going to be late, guys.
Sorry.
But she's been very, very good to work with. And, of course, book two is about to.
Maybe you should throw out a few more compliments for her as well.
Well, Cynthia is awesome. yeah, she is. But book two is almost ready to go, right? And so it's about to hit, but I've been so consumed with getting it finished and getting it edited. And I have not been able to work on book three, which is putting me at a very late pace. So hopefully she will continue to be patient with me. But, with Abandoned Hope with Sarah, we started, I think it was 2015 when we first said, okay, let's go for it. And then we had to build a proposal. And so we spent a couple of months building the proposal. Then she started submitting to editors and we did that for about a year. Right.
Yeah.
And then, finally, I think we were like, we've submitted to just about everybody we can submit to. So I self-published initially and then all of a sudden you came across Cynthia. So how'd you come across Cynthia on my behalf? How'd that happen?
Yeah. Well, I met her at a conference before COVID, obviously. I met her at a Christian writing conference. And I don't know if you know the background of her company, Mike. Well,
so, a little bit, but go ahead.
Yeah, Chip McGregor, who is another agent in the Christian world, it used to be his company, if I'm remembering correctly. And she kind of took it over from him. And I mean, she just works incredibly fast. I mean, she does great work and she's just on top of her game. So, whereas most editors, especially for fiction, need at least 6 months to a year. I mean, 6 months is short for an editor to consider a full proposal for fiction. She can have a response to me within a week, maybe even a weekend. She's very on top of what she's doing.
Cynthia's swift.
Yes. Well, that is the cool thing about it, because I guarantee you that when I send the manuscript to her for Nozomi's Battle, which is book two, when I send it to her and say, okay, we're going for it, as long as I have the back cover blurb and the, credit the page where I talk about the, who I'm thanking and the author bio stuff, as long as I have all that to her, it'll be on the market in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
2 weeks. And like you say, other traditional publishers, it's 6 months or more.
Yeah. So. And Cynthia is traditional, in that you don't have to pay her. But it's, she's a no advance house, so you're not getting any upfront money.
Yeah. My problem with the other place was that they were a no payment period.
Please. Too bad we don't have a sound effect for that.
No, actually, I do.
Do you have one for that particular one?
I do, but I can't remember which button it is.
And so you don't want to test them out right now. You need to label them.
You know what? I really should. Because
Mom has a label maker. Somewhere in the Cutters Notch Studios exists a label maker.
Well, we should look for that. We'll have the Cutters Notch mother.
You should give me control of the soundboard and I will make it.
Oh, I don't know if I want you touching it.
Hey, I did radio for years.
That's true. You did. That's true. That's true. You're probably more capable at this sound thing than I am.
I'd pick it up.
Well, that's cool, Sarah. So gosh, I had three or four questions that were lined up and now I'm drawing a blank on them, but what do you have a particular author you're working with right now that you'd like to highlight on this podcast?
You sound like you're fishing for compliments.
No, I'm not. I'm thinking of somebody, not me.
You didn't specify that at first.
She's already talked about me enough. So if there's somebody else you want to, you know, like, hey, you know, this book just came out, you know, this is my author and it just came out, tell us about it.
Sure. Well, I'll just talk about these that just received some contracts, if that's okay.
Yeah, go for it.
So one of them is Amy Sorrells, and she is writing a devotional for healthcare workers, and they're rushing it to press. So we're anticipating
it'll be the right time for it.
Yeah, exactly. It just hit right at the right time. She's a great writer. She normally writes fiction, but these are obviously nonfiction, and we literally just got the contract. She's going through edits, and they're going to print it in the U.S. and rush it to be out by June. They were going to try for May, but that was just too quick for their sales team. So June, that should be out. I'm sorry, I've forgotten the title because they changed the title. I think it's something about healthcare heroes, but I know Amy Sorrells is the author, and it's a devotional for healthcare workers. And then my other one is Angela Strong, and she has a novel called Husband Auditions, and it's based off of an article. I think it was in McCall magazine or like a McCall article that was written, I don't know, in the 30s or 40s, 50s, about what a wife should look like. The protagonist basically like tries to do these things to
the exact description. And
yeah, so it's pretty funny. So that's a romance novel, and she's a wonderful author. She's got quick wit, and just she's a fantastic writer to work with. So those are my two that, like I said, just got contracts, so they'll be out within the next year or so.
Very good.
Yeah, that sounds great. Both of those sound really interesting to me. I really do like the what a perfect housewife from like what the 30s or 40s would have been. Somebody trying to do that now. That sounds a little, sounds hilarious.
Yeah.
All right, Sarah, I do have one final question. And then I think we might see if you want to risk the random question box.
No, I think I'll come up with a random question. We're not going to ask those.
You're going to give her a random
question?
I'll
look one up because I don't want to listen to the same exact questions over
and
over.
All right, well, okay. While I ask you this question, Angela's going to create a random question for you, which is just for fun. Don't worry too much about that one. Just have a little fun with it. So my last question for you is, tell me, well, it's not really a question. I want to ask you to elaborate a little bit on WordServe Literary. So tell us about that agency and why authors should look at WordServe for representation.
Sure. So WordServe has been around for a while now. I want to say Greg and one other agent, which is Chip, not with WordServe, but they started like around the same time. So Greg was like one of the first Christian literary agents to hit the market. And so he's represented several authors, hundreds of authors and hundreds of sales. And so he's our boss, Greg Johnson. And then we have me and then Keely Boving and also Nick Harrison, who he used to be an editor with, I think it was Harvest House. I think there's, in total, there are five of us. Four of us. Me, let's see. Greg, me, Ely, Nick, four of us. sorry, math is not my strong suit.
Yeah, same here.
And we all kind of, you know, like and prefer different things. Greg really enjoys and is doing well with historicals, like World War II type, you know, war, mostly nonfiction. And then I'm not entirely sure what Keely's looking for. I think she does a lot of nonfiction as well. She comes from the background of an academic publisher, I believe. I don't remember the name of it right now. Like I said, Nick was an editor before becoming an agent. Definitely, you know, if any of those people or topics sound interesting, you know, feel free to submit. Keely and I are probably taking on the most clients. I think Greg has kind of slowed down, especially with fiction. But, you know, I know he'll take on something if it looks absolutely amazing. And we also have collaborators. So if you're a writer and you don't have a good platform, but you have a good story, we have collaborators and we can hook you up with a collaborator that can write your proposal and your novel your book as well, your nonfiction.
What are you looking for right now? If people were interested in, you know, looking for an agent, what are you particularly looking for in your, in your book?
Yeah. My favorite genre is romantic suspense. I do enjoy historical romance, but those just don't seem to be selling well right now. So I'm kind of taking a break from taking those on. Good writing. I say that and people, you know, don't necessarily know what it means, but you know, I know it when I see it, it's gotta be something interesting. I just had a writer, I read through the, it was a 600 page book, but it was so good. He had other agents interested in him, but it was him kind of in the Hamilton area, and Hamilton was even mentioned in his novel. So, that was good. but you know, just something that's unique and that I feel like it can work in the market right now. And another thing, you know, we're looking for writers of color, and characters of color, just so that's represented more. I think that's important to have, whether that's fiction or whether that's nonfiction. You know, if you can do that, and if you are a person of color, like I'd love to represent more writers that are people of color.
Well, how would you suggest someone reaching out to you at this point? How would they get a hold of you?
Sure. So you can email me. My email is Sarah with an H at wordserveliterary.com. And same with all of our other agents, you know, Greg at wordserveliterary.com, Keely, which is K-E-E-L-Y at wordserveliterary, Nick at wordserveliterary.
And people, don't forget the H at the end of Sarah's name because, yeah.
You can forget it. I mean, you could forget it in the email and I may look beyond it, but if you forget it in the actual address line, it's not.
Yeah, you're not going to even get anything.
Right.
It never makes it to your desk.
Right. So. We also do have the general admin at WordServe, but, you know, that doesn't get, we get a lot of emails through that. So I would suggest emailing directly to one of us.
Okay, very good. So Angela, did you come up with a random question?
I did. I do have a random question. I actually feel like it's a really interesting question, so it might take a second to think about it. But the question is, in 40 years, what do you think people will be nostalgic for?
Oh.
I don't know. It's a thinker.
Yeah. Okay. 40 years.
So 2080. Is it 2080?
Sure.
Okay. I'm not great with math either. It's like, oh no.
Four year colleges.
That is probably so true. Yeah.
I do because I feel like that whole college experience, and I mean, I had it, but I think even by the time my kids get to be that age, so 15 years, 10 years, I don't know, I think they're going to be gone. I don't think there's going to be any need for 4-year colleges.
Yeah, I can say what's changing so much. And I think the climate, well, not the climate, but the reality we're in right now has really changed the way universities are operating in general.
Yep. Yeah. And that's not to say anything bad about universities. Again, I had a great experience there, but I do think that's something that our generation will be like, oh, I remember when. And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was a really good thought. I didn't think about that when you said it. It just hit me. I was like, oh yeah, there's no way it's going to be exactly the same in 40 years.
I've got one.
Yeah. Okay. What is it, Dad?
In 40 years, people will be nostalgic for cars that you can drive yourself.
Well, hopefully we won't need cars and we can use public transportation and bicycles. But anyway, moving on.
Yeah, that's a generational thing there.
Not necessarily, but you know, it's okay.
I saw an ad yesterday for, it was a Japanese company. It wasn't an ad, it was a story. I think it was in some scientific magazine, but they're creating a flying car for real that will be on the market.
They've always said that kind of thing.
Supposedly this thing is going to be released in 2023, and they're testing it on the Toyota property in Japan. So supposedly, and they had a picture. They had a picture of it. It was a real looking.
I'll believe it when I see it in real life.
So maybe the Jetsons will be real eventually.
Maybe.
But I think eventually we won't be allowed to drive our own cars anymore. And people will be nostalgic for that.
Yeah, maybe. But hopefully we won't need to.
Sarah, do you think we'll still have paper books in 40 years?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. I don't know. Well, and I also think, I mean, not just the books, but just the mindset of people today, although I don't know, because COVID, so we're kind of back to like holding on to things. Whereas before COVID, many people in my generation were kind of like, okay, get rid of all the stuff and live simply and have maybe one or two books. I kind of thought, you know, the world was heading that way, but then, you know, again with COVID and people hoarding toilet paper. Mm-hmm. I mean, when the toilet paper goes, like,
what? That's your backup option here,
right?
Like, which book did you really not enjoy? Okay,
which one goes first?
Yeah.
So no, I don't know. I feel like yes, but I feel like there'll be more. So for, you know, like decoration, like the coffee table decoration versus having an actual book to read. Mm.
It's definitely a lot easier to move when you just have like a Kindle or something.
Yeah.
But I am kind of one of those people that I like to have a lot of books in my house. I really try to make an effort to not like have them on my shelf unless I actually have read them, because otherwise I feel like a fraud. but I like the comfort of the actual bound book.
Sure.
Yeah, I still prefer paper, but I've got
I a do Kindle. As well.
They smell better.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got a Kindle with two books on it right now waiting for me to finish. Same. Savannah's book. So
I've got a couple of books on my Kindle. I don't think I've turned it on in a while. I need to probably do that. Thanks for the gift, guys. Sorry.
Sure.
Well, I want to give my answer to the random question.
Go for it.
This is maybe optimistic, but I wonder if people will be nostalgic for mowed lawns. And the reason I say that is because it's kind of wasteful to have a lawn, and maybe like with conservation and such in the future, like you're going to have more native plants in your yard that you won't actually need to mow. Or maybe it'll be full of like, everybody's like growing things now, right? Like their entire yards are like little boxes with tomatoes and different things like that. Like, I wonder if we're going to see more and more of that rather than just grass mowed. Hmm. So I don't know.
Interesting. You know, Sarah, I had my best friend lives in Colorado, and I know that's where you lived for a while. And it was a thing out there, Angela, where they were actually were going away from any kind of imported grasses and going just to native plants in their yards.
It's a trend all over the place. If you see there's a bunch of places in Indy even that like have converted at least parts of their lawn to, you know, native plants like goldenrod and different things around. I mean, I try to plant mostly native plants. It's better for the, you know, birds and the wildlife. But there's an organization in Indianapolis called Keep Indianapolis Beautiful, and they do a lot of work on inputting or, I don't know, like planting a lot of native plants around. So I think we'll probably see more of that because it is just an effort to mow, and it's kind of annoying to upkeep. And I think the more people start planting things, and maybe we might in the next 40 years see a shift.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, Sarah, I appreciate so much you joining us, taking the time out of your, recording is a Labor Day weekend. It's Sunday afternoon. She's taking a break from her family to talk to us for an hour, and I appreciate that very much.
I say you're welcome for that. But that's just my perspective.
Just to give you a little something to look forward to. Since we're tied to the hip on my writing.
Is something else going to be late? Are you letting her know now?
No. I'm letting her know that actually the Loving Out Loud book has had a really good run on Amazon sales for the last 2 weeks. So the numbers have definitely spiked up the last couple of weeks, and I'm hoping that trend continues. But that means you're actually going to get some money out of your work you've done.
Congratulations.
So I don't know, you know, after Amazon takes their cut and Cindy gets her cut and Greg gets his cut, then I get my cut, then you have a cut.
I'll buy a very expensive coffee.
There you go. Well, thank you very much, Sarah. I appreciate you joining us. For all you folks out there in the listening world, thank you for joining the Cutter's Notch podcast. And please remember to leave us a review.
Rate us, review us. We're on Apple Podcasts. We're all over the place. And I don't think anybody has yet, so you're not going to get it. I think the last time I said that if you wrote a review, unless, Dad, you have something to tell me.
I have not seen any reviews.
Last time I said if you wrote a review, I would write you a handwritten letter and send it to you in the mail. But guess what? Nobody gets that. Well,
it could still happen.
That was only good for a little bit.
I don't remember you giving a limitation.
I am now.
Oh, you're limiting it now. Okay. Well, I'll write you a little letter and sign it and send it to you. How about that?
It's so, like second. It's not as good as if I were going to do it.
That's true. That's true. But leave us a review. If you found this podcast on a social media site, share it. Share it to your page so other people can find it. And let people know about the Cutter's Notch podcast. This is episode number 21. So if you enjoyed this one, there's 20 other ones you can listen to.
And now the podcast is old enough to drink.
Yes, 21 years old.
I don't know why I said that.
Pretty soon it'll be, in 10 more, we'll have the Reggie Miller podcast.
You can't do inside jokes in a podcast. Nobody understands them. Well,
I can because I knew you'd react to it. So Angela just reached her 30, Reggie Miller birthday.
And here we go, ladies and gentlemen, a man is revealing the age of another person without their permission. So have a great weekend, everyone.
I can always trim that if you're really nice.
I have plenty of insults I can trade back to you, but I'm rising above. I'm choosing to rise above. Well,
I appreciate it. I'll pay for this later, guys, folks.
Yes, you will.
This will be something that I will pay for. So anyway, thank you very much for joining the Cutter's Notch podcast, and we will see you.
Thanks to Bill for editing, always.
Thank you for
we never our, thank him. We need we to thank him more often.
Well, just go ahead and do it.
Thanks, Bill.
Bill who?
Whitehair.
Bill Whitehair, our wonderful producer.
Thanks. Yeah,
he does the final production on this before it gets submitted onto the system.
So if you didn't like the podcast, blame Bill.
We'll blame Bill. Yeah. So thank you, everybody, and we will see you next time on the Cutter's Notch podcast.
The Cutter's Notch podcast can be found through any podcast listing provider. New episodes will drop approximately twice per month. Connect with Michael at the following email address, authormicheldecamp@gmail.com. Again, that's authormicheldecamp shirleytemple@gmail.com. Abandon Hope. A Cutter's Notch novel can be purchased as an ebook, paperback, or hardcover through any bookstore, both online and local. Get your copy and start your own Cutter's Notch adventure today.